Thank you, Larry. So INSERM is just the French National Institute of Health and Medical Research. Oh, sorry. In French, it's Institut National de la Santé et de la Recherche Médicale. So this was your French lesson for this morning. So as you can see, I have no relationships to disclose in relation to this presentation. Harry was asking me to talk about longevity and healthy aging in Europe. And I like to start with this figure, which is coming from a very well-known paper published in Science in 2002 by Open and Vopel. But it's not the figure one, everybody knows. It's a figure two, but this is in our mind. And here you can see it's a huge convergence of the life expectancy at birth between the countries. And this is really what we are thinking about. Life expectancies are converging. And because we are now in this globalization, things can only be more converging. And I want to start talking about that because I think it's a very important issue in Europe, but maybe not only in Europe. And effectively, here, what we can see. And here I'm using a few countries, of course, from Europe, Denmark, France, but also Japan, Spain, Sweden, and also the United States. And we can see after World War II, this extremely strong convergence between our countries. Here we are looking at the life expectancy at age 65. So we are talking about the elderly. It's an aging session. And look at the end of the, or in the middle of the 70s, the life expectancy, you see, at age 65, the life expectancy in Denmark, in Spain, in Japan, or in the United States was exactly the same, within 6 months. And you can see the same for male. So it was an extremely strong concentration. And we stop here. And we are thinking since things are going like that, and developing or emerging countries, they are just converging. But in fact, after that, and for some reason, we don't know, the countries, and here we are only talking about the most developed countries, the low mortality countries, they're starting diverging for 20 years. And now, from 1995 or 2000, you know, it's back increasing. They're all increasing in parallel. But now we have a big gap, which occurred between the 70s and the end of the 90s. And this gap is not closing. So we are starting in a situation where you see at age 65, of course, if we compare the females to the Danish women, can you imagine at age 65, the Japanese women have 5 to 6 years more life expectancy than a Danish woman. And so the gap is smaller for men, but you know they are not closing. And if I'm just adding the Eastern European countries, you can see that in fact all the countries are effectively increasing. I'm just looking for the last year, but they are all in parallel. So we, and here you can see the gap is from about 18 years life expectancy in the Baltic countries to 22 or 23 years. So the gap is just huge in France, for instance. So we have a big, and we can see exactly the same for the, sorry, yes, for females or for the males. So we have now, or we have a big gap in terms of life expectancy at age 65 between the European countries, between the 27 member states of the European Union, and the gap is not closing. So the consequences of that is that, in fact, there is a huge diversity in the pace of accumulation of the oldest old in our countries. We have an indicator called the centenarian rate. It's not the right time to explain exactly what it is. But this indicator is measuring at which speed we are accumulating centenarians. It's just an indicator. It's the same for the nonagenarians or the octogenarians. And here, what is important to see on this figure is there is, you know, the range between France and Bulgaria, so they are all European member states countries, is tenfold. In fact, in France, we are accumulating the centenarians or the nonagenarians 10 times faster than in Bulgaria. And, okay, we know Bulgaria is one of the poorest European countries. But it is interesting to see that we don't have clusters. We cannot see here, for instance, the Western European countries and the Eastern European countries. You see, we are finding about almost all values between these two extremes. And this is important because, in fact, we don't have universal or international information about the speed of accumulation of the oldest old in our countries. In fact, it is highly specific to each country. I cannot use information coming from Sweden or from England to replace some missing information I can have in France about the functional health status of the oldest old because we are not accumulating them at the same speed. And it's extremely different. And when we are looking at the projection, and here, you these are coming from Eurostat. Sorry for that. It's from Apple to Windows. We can find again this huge gap today in terms of life expectancy. Here, I think it is at birth. And you can see that, in fact, Eurostat, so this is just forecast, but Eurostat is forecasting that in 50 years, we will still have strong gaps between us. So we are normally making a federation of countries, and here the speed of reduction in the gaps is 15% per decade. So like that, we will need more than one century to have the same life expectancy in the European countries. And when East Germany joined West Germany at the beginning, so in 1990, the gap in terms of life expectancy was quite strong, but the gap disappeared in less than 10 years. So, you know, it's a question of volunteer will. If we want, when we are putting together countries, it's possible to come to the same life expectancy. We had the example of East and West Germany in about 10 years. So we can reduce a gap in 10 years if we have this political will. But here, we are just expecting to do that in one century if we follow the scenarios of Eurostat. And it is in this context that the European Commission, so the leading body, decided to put among its new strategy for Europe 2020, called Innovation Union, to fix as the first target to increase active life expectancy, so it's called by 2 years in the coming 10 years. So this is the first common target we have in the new European strategy. It is to increase by 2 years, if you want, the disability-free life expectancy in Europe. Why I'm talking about that, or I have been invited by Larry to talk about that, because I am the project leader of another thing, which is the joint action on the healthy life years, which is a joint action between the Commission and the Member States. I'm sorry, the European Europe is quite complicated. So the countries are working with the Commission to monitor change over time in health and life expectancy and to try to find the determinants of or the cause of premature mortality and premature disability and to find where we can get active and healthy years in the coming years to meet this target. So if you are interested by that, I put some flyers on the table at the bottom of the room. And here we have clearly a mandate from the Commission and from the European Member States to involve in what we are doing in this monitoring the United States, Japan, and if possible, the other OECD countries. I'm quite happy to tell you that the Chinese Healthy Longevity Survey will include the basic European questions in the future waves to be also able to compute exactly the same indicator in China. So now I will show you just to some trends in disability-free life expectancy that we have started to monitor in Europe. And I will go on and back. I'm starting with a very small island, Cyprus. But Cyprus is quite interesting because in Cyprus we can measure this very strong increase in life expectancy, but also in disability-free life expectancy, which is this healthy life years indicator at the European level. And you see, it seems to be the same in Belgium or in the Czech Republic. So it's quite interesting. So you remember, the target is to increase this by 2 years in the coming 10 years. So this is the first public health target in Europe. And so it seems quite good. You see, in the United Kingdom, in everywhere it seems to be increasing. But you see now I'm showing you some other countries. Now if you look at that in Germany, it's less increasing, fluctuating a little bit, but more flat. It's the same in France. And Germany and in France, they are two big countries. So if I go back, you can also now look at the gender. So always you have the males, and here you have the females. And if we are looking at the gender, we can see that the increase is clear for the males, but here you see for the last few years, it seems that the disability-free life expectancy was stagnating for the females, and it seems to be the same in the Czech Republic and the same in the United Kingdom. So in fact, the clear increase in disability-free life expectancy is more concerning the males than the females. And then after that we were seeing, Germany, so Germany is flat, France is flat for male and female. But look, in Spain, it seems to be slightly decreasing. And look in Slovakia, and in Greece, and in Italy. So this is what we are today observing since the European Commission decided for the previous strategy. It was the Lisbon strategy. The Lisbon strategy was going from 2000 to 2010. And in this framework, the European Commission decided to start monitoring health and life expectancy in Europe. It is why we have this common indicator. But now the target is to increase the healthy life years by 2 years. But when we are looking at what we are observing, definitively, the disability-free life expectancy is increasing in some countries, flat in some others, and decreasing in some countries. And if, okay, we don't have a very strong correlation, but it seems that when the life expectancy is strongly increasing, the disability-free life expectancy tends to decrease. And when the life expectancy is increasing quite slowly, like in Denmark, it seems that the disability-free life expectancy is increasing. So it seems that we have a correlation between the level of life expectancy, the pace of increase in life expectancy, and the trend in the disability-free life expectancy. So we are really at the beginning of this monitoring system. We are observing some correlations. They are not so strong. In a previous paper, just with the first data, the one in 2005, we published a paper in The Lancet showing the kind of correlation you were talking about, wealth and life expectancy and health expectancy. And so what I want to there is two things I want to tell you. This is something new in Europe, and you know, for maybe 20 years, researchers were trying to develop the summary measure of population health. This development have been made in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, but in no country it was really used. And the Commission was the first one starting to say we need to have a disability-free life expectancy as a basic indicator computed every year, comparable between all the member states, and even if it's not perfect, we have to start using it. Here it's where we are. And it is built on the life tables provided by Eurostat, and the disability information is coming from a survey organized by Eurostat, but run by the national statistical bureaus like ONS in UK or INSEE in France. And this common survey is called EU Statistics on Income and Living Conditions, so it's more dealing with the living conditions. But within this survey, there is a small module called the Mini European Health Module with a few questions. And among these few questions, there is a GALI question, the Global Activity Limitation Indicator. It is important to see that because it is quite limited, but it is something that we have in all the European countries, in the surveys, in the social surveys now, in all these 27 European countries. At least we have exactly the same question, which is for at least the past 6 months, to what extent have you been limited because of a health problem in activities people usually do? Would you say you have been strongly limited, limited or not limited at all? We will not discuss about this question. Now, we can discuss, but it will take a lot of time. So it is important to know that for the time being, the disability-free life expectancy that we are using in Europe is solely based on that. We have a mandate to reconsider this, to see whether we can use a better indicator than that one, and to do that in collaboration with the United States, Japan, and other OECD countries. So we have clearly the mandate to do that. We will see whether next year we can organize with Larry a special session on that here during the American Public Health Association. We are not suggesting all the countries to take this question, but this question was developed more than 10 years ago. We have now 5 or 6 papers published about its validity. So it took more than 10 years for the 27 European countries to proper translate it in their national language. So you see, in total, it's something like 15 years, even for a so simple question. You have to do all the conceptual work to decide, because you are thinking this could be the best question. Then you start with cognitive testing, field work, you are publishing. This question is in CHERE. CHERE, you know, it's an European HRS. And thanks to CHERE, we have been able to see how this question is correlated to the walk speed, the grip strength. So we know that among all the self-reported health questions, this question is the one which is the most correlated to what we can call objective health. So this was taking a lot of time just to have all this validation work to be done and to be published using other surveys. And then after that, I said 5 or more years to get this question properly translated in Danish, in Spanish, in Italian. It's amazing how people are translating standard question in their national language. So, I think I will stop here. But if you are interested, the European Commission and the European countries are really inviting all countries to join their effort to try to find and to develop. The point here, we don't want, we have nothing to sell to you. We don't want to sell our European indicator to the other countries. But we want to invite the other countries, specifically I'm here in the US, the US, to join us to prepare to devise the next common indicator. Maybe it will take 10 or more years because this is the time we need to do. But if we want one day to be able to compare the functional health status or the disability-free life expectancy between our countries in the same way we are comparing the mortality indicators today, we need to do this kind of work. So thank you for your attention. Questions?
Yeah, just wondering, in terms of the disability-free life expectancy, do you capture mental illness as well as the other component of health, or is it primarily functional abilities, ADL kind of stuff?
So this is one of the challenges that we have in the coming years and in this joint action. It is to see whether we can better capture mental health. And in this mini European health module, for the time being, we have three global questions. One is on perceived health, and this is a WHO perceived health question. This was proposed by WHO 30 years ago, and still in some countries it is not properly translated. Huh? And so, how is your health in general? Very good, good, fair, bad, and very bad. Here in the US, the answer categories are excellent, very good, good, fair, and bad, which is, you know, it's. It is not comparable. And when you are asking a French person or an Italian one, do you distinguish between excellent and very good? Is no. So we don't know how you are doing that, but we are unable because for the definition of very good is excellent or vice versa. So even on that, on this question proposed by the World Health Organization 25 or 30 years ago, it's still impossible to compare the American indicator with the European indicator. But UK is following the US on that. So you. Okay.
Last question, sir.
Just a small question. Why would Luxembourg
and
Luxembourg have such a low rate of
suicide?
Why would they have such a low rate of centenarians compared to the neighboring countries?
Maybe it's a question, I don't know. But. Luxembourg is very bizarre. You know, it's a very small state, but at the same time, they are hosting a lot of EU commissional facilities. Their level of income is the highest in the world now, but just because they have so many European public servants. And so their indicators are a little bit bizarre. So maybe it's in fact it's a quite young population, just because the growth was enormous during the last years with the arrival of many commission services.
Thank you.